estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 521. I'm Adam and Sontaha, and here is Ben Shavla.
I said so, didn't I? Aliens. I said they was real. I just didn't expect them to come in a little blue box.
Kirby Butler Sloan.
That's a tautology. You can't say Atmos system because it stands for atmospheric emission system. So you can't say atmospheric emission system. Do you see, Mr. Conditional Clause?
Did you nearly not say that, Kirby? She's gone all quiet.
What?
It sounded like you stumbled over a bit of that.
Yes. Okay, I can do it.
I was going to let
it's like
him
a
off.
Potato, a baked potato.
It's because he's talking too fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. He's trying to show off.
And Mary Lang.
He's too skinny for words. You hug him, you get a paper cut.
Very good. Right, yes, this week we're doing Sontaran Stratagem and Poison Sky. So, without further ado, straight in.
I forgot to tell Andy we were doing both of them. Oh, well.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
So, Adam.
Yes?
I do need to point out I'm in an exceptionally grumpy mood this evening. So I shall be even more cutting and nasty than normal.
Ooh!
Yes, so I don't mean it. I'm just in a bad mood.
Nothing to do with Manchester United, is it, by any chance?
No. All to do with my brilliant birthday.
Oh, well, we might have to talk about that later. Right, the Sontaran Stratagem. But by the way, hi, Lillian Robin, who says hi. So I thought I'd better drop that one in there. It begins with a sort of... my slider not working. Oh, here we go now.
Your slider's not working.
What?
Your slider's not working.
Oh, be quiet. Exterior shot of a mansion house where all the lighting is pink. And there's a woman that appears to be some sort of journalist who's been dragged away, kicking and screaming by some chavs in red hoodies. A rather sort of annoying... American brat who's sort of obviously appears to be their leader. It's almost like a little cult, isn't it? Anyway, she gets into a car.
They've used that location, Markham Country Park, many times. It was also the Abbey and Eye of the Gorgon for Sarah Jane. It was where Gwyn and Reese got married in Something Borrowed in Torchwood. And it was also where the Roman camp and Stonehenge were, except when they went to the real Stonehenge.
Okay. Anyway, she gets into a car and sets her sat-nav system, which is some sort of thing with a logo, Atmos, on it. And it's more or less driving the car because it tells her to go turn left, even though she could probably see from where she was. It tells her to turn left towards a river, but you could probably see that it was probably going to be the wrong turn. I once drove my sat nav, and when I went to Walsall, was it Walsall? Somewhere up in Birmingham way. I said the postcode, drove into it, and it turned me into a farm lane with a dead end, where I was actually supposed to be turning into a car park with the words Travelodge on it. So I should have noticed at the time that wasn't quite right. So yes, I think. After all these years now, I would expect people to be looking out their car windows as well as sort of listening to the suggestions that the sat-nav gives. Anyway, the woman drives a... What?
That's not a river. That's Cardiff Bay.
I don't give a tinker's cuss. She's driven into the water and sinks very quickly. And then we cut
to... Well, that's because it was missing some windows on the side we couldn't see.
It was also
a stunt car.
Go into the TARDIS where the Doctor and Donna are sort of just messing around with the TARDIS, and then the Doctor gets a phone call on his fancy old-fashioned phone, and it's a smarmy, slightly what would you call it? It's another word beginning with a
anemic.
No, it's what the Doctor normally
anglified.
Is. No, it's her attitude. Arrogant, that's the word. Yeah, arrogant Martha. I'm bringing you home, she says to the doctor in a very sort of slightly irritating way. Anyway, she does. And she meets, she's now become the official medical doctor of UNIT. She said they helped her get through her qualifications very quickly. And there's a really strange scene where the TARDIS arrives and the doctor steps out the TARDIS and Martha's waiting there, and they sort of walk to each other very slowly and suddenly have a big cuddle. I think the big cuddle probably would normally happen at the beginning of that. Then Donna steps out and they have a sort of interruption.
Yeah, it's Donna who makes that new reunion less awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're ready for the two of them to fight, you know, but yeah. Instead she goes right into
it. Wasn't quite Sarah Jane and Rose, yeah. Was it? Beg your pardon, Kirby?
The doctor was expecting a fight.
Hoping for one, I suspect.
In words that will confuse many, many people, Boreham would have just scored.
Anyway, are you watching the FA Cup? Where's that on then?
ITV4.
Oh!
Boreham Wood, right?
We've lost him now.
For non-footballing people, that's not throwball.
That's where EastEnders is filmed.
In America, this is proper kickball like we have in England. Boreham Wood are like, I don't know, it would be like your college setup. Something like that.
I don't know anything about football, sport, full stop. So you really are barking up the wrong tree there. They do not know anything about... It's like basically the football team that plays around the corner from Kirby playing against the winners of the Super Bowl thingy.
Super Bowl?
Oh, never mind. Anyway, so...
Is that American throwball?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they have Bournemouth against Bournemouth. Yeah, so what's her name again? Martha, yeah. So she has made friends very quickly with Donna and shows that she's got Lucifer's engagement ring. And then she shows off with a little walkie-talkie because she's quite high up with UNIT. She's very arrogant about her little promotion and very showy-offy about it. And then the doctor, as soon as he sees all the UNIT soldiers, looks slightly sort of, what's the word for it, disapproving. Robert Vance Jr. says, "Hi, everyone. By the way, Adam, is that cookie box next to you? What's she on about? Oh, are you he's talking about my Jammy Dodger tin.
Yeah.
Right there. And aren't those biscuits not cookies?
it's a bit of a product placement because there's a Jammy Dodger tin on top of an Amazon package. So will I get some money from Jammy Dodgers? Who makes Jammy Dodgers? I don't know. I don't care. Anyway, they're very nice.
I ate an entire Marks and Spencer's Colin the Caterpillar cake in a day and a half.
Did you? Is that one of the mini love ones that
I did a TikTok for the mini love ones. Full size, about a foot and a half.
But they are nice, Ben.
God, it was lovely.
So really, it's totally understandable.
Very nice it was.
Anyway, the UNIT soldiers are doing a raid on a factory, the Atmos factory, because of obviously what happened to that woman who drove her car into a lake, and there's been other happenings of a similar ilk. So the doctor goes in. He's very sort of unenthusiastic, shall we say, about the whole UNIT setup. And he meets the Brigadier's sidekick, because the Brigadier isn't there because he's in Peru or something like that, who salutes him. He doesn't like being saluted, but Donna does. I quite like that.
Yes.
Yeah, and for this whole thing, the doctor is just so rude to that colonel. And it's like, you know, what, did he kick your puppy or something? You know, what's...
Yeah. I don't know. It's a bit weird, isn't it? Bearing in mind he's sort of been involved in a war, you know, in his own planet for all that time. He's a sort of bit... And also UNIT are there to try and protect Earth, which is essentially what he's supposed to be doing as well. So, you know, and he worked for them, and he could have not worked for them even when he was sort of stranded on Earth, but he did. So
I did like the reference to the UNIT dating controversy.
Yes.
He said something like... I worked with him in the 70s, or was it the 80s?
Yes. Yeah, there was a couple of little references like that, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Talk about, no, I wish the Brigadier was here, and And he said Sir Alistair was stuck in Peru, like I alluded to. Anyway, they have a little tour of the unit set up.
Master. And
what?
They made the set, you know, that set is sort of, it's supposed to be inside that that truck. But they made it too long. And so they made the set too long. So they asked the mill to put a CGI extension on the outside of the truck to make it the same length as the inside.
Wouldn't it have been funnier if it was bigger on the inside?
Yeah, I think that it should have been. But that's what I'm just saying what they did.
Yeah, okay, thank you. All right, anyway, so these two soldiers start walking through the corridor, and then and John Davy and his mate are standing rather sort of zombie-like next to the entrance to...
That's John Davy?
What?
I didn't really recognize.
This is the most that John Davy, I think, has ever been in shot or in a scene. He actually had a line in this too. I can't remember what his line is.
I didn't see that. Was that in the toilets?
Nice one, Ben. That was really good. I love that one.
Three or four years ago, the last time I went to a Doctor Who convention, I had several conversations with John Davy.
Yeah, Ben's had a conversation with John Davy. No, he hasn't.
I might have done.
Yes, did you? I don't know. I made a boo-boo with John Davy, but he just still paid me, so that's fine. Anyway, so...
Did you hear me? I said I had breakfast.
Mary, I didn't have breakfast with him, to be fair. At least...
He showed me his teeth.
Oh, I bet that was thrilling.
There's a picture out
there. I had an evening dinner with John Davy, Mary. Does that equalise?
Yeah, well, I had a date with John Davy.
But I had an evening dinner with John Davy and Matthew Waterhouse. Does that win?
Ooh, I had his baby.
I had a dinner with Colin Baker. I didn't have to pay extra for it.
I had Colin Baker on my car on several occasions.
I've had Colin Baker in my car once.
I am Colin Baker.
You are?
That's my wife.
Anyway, right. So these two soldiers go through, are let eventually through this door because somebody's inside said that. And John Davy, I've actually got John Davy's line here, bear with. Let's turn the volume up on this setup. Here's John Davy's line.
Open.
Here we are, John. It's open. It doesn't sound very West Country, does it? It's open. So in they go, and inside there's a sort of vat, and inside the vat is a creepy thing with a man with an umbilical thing coming out the back of it and a sort of lips that were sort of semi stuck together. Very good design. Looks slightly Gollumish, actually, to be fair.
There's a whole section in the confidential cutdown where they show the filming of that.
He's very good. It's very, very impressive.
Yes.
Soldiers are slightly freaked out by this, naturally so, but one of them seems to be a little bit cleverer than the other. Sontaran, as Donna calls him. soldier turns up and, of course, gets some sizist humour directed at him. At this point, I was saying, oh, good, he's going to get... done in for his ridiculous sizist humour, but what happens is that the Sontaran shoots them both in the legs with his zap gun, and then John Davy and his little friend come in and act as henchmen, and then friend of the show, Christopher Ryan, who I was actually going to phone up this week to see if he'd come on, but I forgot, and of course the other reason is I don't think he'd probably come on at a specific time anyway. He's a very nice chap. Isn't he, Ben?
He was the nicest person, along with Martin Ballantyne.
I thought that... really? Oh, I thought I'm glad you said that.
I really like me and Martin got on very well. He was a lovely fella.
Oh, that's nice.
Christopher Ryan, he's an absolute hero of mine anyway, because he was in The Young Ones.
And
to meet him was just... It was worth even going to the Isle of Wight for.
I'm pleased, even though she didn't do much. Valile Shabalala, because it was nice enough trying to pronounce her name.
I want to go to the Isle of Wight.
Can you?
My wife and I were talking yesterday about if we ever had were to go to the UK, we'd have to spend weeks there because of all the things we want to see.
You wouldn't. You'd probably do the whole week, whole island in about, I don't know, 45 minutes.
I think
minutes.
He's talking about the whole UK, not just the Isle of Wight. Anyway.
Well, I want to go to Cardiff, of course.
Yeah. The other person, of course.
Yanto's Wall.
Yeah. The other person I was particularly charmed by was Vilile Shabalala, who was an absolute delight, apart from disappearing every 5 seconds for a cigarette. But she was a very nice lady.
She's in a play. Hold on, she's in a play.
She is publicising this play quite a lot, is she not? But while you're doing that, Robert Vance Jr. says, "Lol, even Martha's clone." And then another hot goo look. Right, where are we up to? Right, so Martha and the Doctor are reacquainting, and I think this might be the scene, because obviously they've started to realise that things hitting the fan at the moment, and there's a scene in which Donna sort of comes up to the Doctor and says, "Oh, that's it, sorry, I've got to go." It's brilliant. And I must admit, it was deliberately played as if she was going to be leaving, the way that the facial expressions and it was quite clear. Dumbo, space Dumbo, which I thought was brilliant. Anyway, so the two soldiers have been sort of almost robotized, I suppose. They've been sort of had their minds put under control after being touched by this sort of swamp beast.
Lucky swamp beast.
And I don't mean my mother-in-law. I said that quietly, just in case you, Miss Bibate, was listening. No, my mother-in-law's not really a swamp. That's a mother-in-law joke, because most mother-in-laws are quite nice. But you can't...
I don't like my mother-in-law at all.
You don't?
No. No, not since, for our first wedding anniversary, she bought my daughter and my wife a tablet, not a pack of paracetamol, she bought me an 8-pack of Coca-Cola.
It's still thoughtful. My
that's my wedding anniversary, by the way.
All right. Well, my mother-in-law is very generous and nice, but unfortunately, it doesn't sort of go very well when trying to tell mother-in-law jokes when you actually have got a lovely, wonderful mother-in-law like I have. Anyway, moving forward.
My way.
So that's the secret. Anybody watches my mother-in-law jokes on TikTok, of course, they are complete fabrications because my mother-in-law is absolutely adorable. Right, so anyway, we got past the bit where... another scene where Martha is interviewing the workers at the Atmos factory and interviews this sort of chap with a strange accent who just stares sort of into space. "I'm here to work." See, that could have been a quote, couldn't it? "I'm here to work."
I used it 10 years ago.
Beg your pardon?
That was my quote 10 years ago.
"Well, I'm here to work."
"Well, I'm here to work, yes."
Well, you are, so that would have been correct. Anyway, so Donna goes home to see her mummy and then has a few flashbacks to stuff she's been up to while being with the Doctor for 5 minutes. And then we see a scene where she and Gramps see each other. It's like those sort of old lovers and they've sort of seen each other. They go run in, give each other a little bit of a hug. At exactly the same time, Martha gets sort of coerced into going to this sort of... place where the swamp beast is and dragged in by the two henched soldiers, and then we have a conversation between the very sort of envious Gramps and Donna about what she's been up to with the Doctor. Should they tell Mum, should they not? Debbie Melrose has just said hi on the... Does that mean you're going to come on, Debbie? Hang on. Robert Vance Jr. says, "Take my wife, please." I thought of that bell just to sort of cover up that. So, Debbie Melrose is watching everyone. I think I should tidy myself up. Hang on.
She's watching everyone?
She's watching me. I'm just going to tidy myself up. I've got this sort of quilted jacket that I wear to work because the heating's never on at work. And just by way of coincidence, by way of the electric being so expensive at the moment, we're basically sitting around the house with the electric off to save money because we just can't afford the rising costs of energy. So I'm sitting here with a fleecy top on to keep warm. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. Oh no, she said, not on Snotty. How dare you call me Snotty? Right, that is it. Can't I'll get abused even when they're not on the blimmin' show.
That is one of the nicer things people call you, mate. I'd accept that with open arms.
Right, anyway, so the Doctor and his little blue-eyed friend go on a mission to see the Rattigan Academy, where our cocky smart ass is. Well, call him cocky smart ass, but his name's Rattigan.
Call him Ben.
What?
If he's a cocky smart ass, call him Ben.
Anyway, he set up this academy of clever people to do stuff. But essentially, the plan is to make it possible for the Sontarans to invade. And what else? Well, yeah, so the Doctor sorts around and takes the mickey out of him a little bit and finds the transmat thing that takes him up to the Sontaran ship. And then we have another quite funny sort of Doctor and villain scene where he sort of takes the mickey out of Christopher Ryan's... Oh, no, was it or David Starkey's character? Anyway, one of the Sontarans, and brings them back with him, and there's a bit of a sort of a reveal scene of... yeah, it's Christopher Ryan in his full Sontaran sort of costume. And the Doctor explains about... this several times in this episode, the probic vent scenario. And then they create a scene. He bounces a what was he bounces something off the wall, doesn't he? Can't
remember what it's was, like a,
oh, it was a rubber ball, which just happens to, just like the Doctor, hit the Sontaran after bouncing off walls from behind on the probic vent, giving them enough time to leg it, run, and they do indeed. And Martha gets.
Why is it for a clone race for this particular Sontaran? Looks different from the rest, and he has facial hair.
Did I create the blooming cat? How would I know? I've got an itchy arm. I'll tell you what, Ben, that blonde one who's presenting the ITV sport thing about, she's usually on Sky.
Yeah, she must have done a channel twant.
Very nice looking lady. Anyway, right, where have we got?
Wood. Laura Wood.
Yeah. Anyway, so the clone Martha...
I'm not just saying random things.
Yeah, the clone Martha is created. And looks quite sexy when she rises up out of the pool with her wet hair and everything. And, of course, then the Atmos thing takes over the sat-nav that the Doctor and the blue-eyed soldier chap, whose name was... Greyhound or something. Can't remember.
Ross,
that's it. Anyway, but the Doctor manages to con the sat-nav into blowing up and stopping and letting them out of the car. So they, the Sontarans initially think the Doctor has died at this point. And then so the Doctor runs to the noble household and has a conversation with the fake Martha, thing where things start getting confusing, to tell her, you know, that Operation Sontaran, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Of course, she avoids passing this message on for the time being, so the Sontaran's evil plan can progress, and the Doctor starts fiddling with Wilf's car, or is it Donna's mum's car? The family car. And
I think they only have the one car. Master?
Yes.
When the Doctor and what is his name, Ross, were in the Jeep, and Atmos was telling them which way to go, the very first thing that Atmos says is, turn left.
Oh, my goodness. Congratulations, Kirby. Never spotted that one.
I noticed that when I was watching it again.
You don't get any more just for showing off. That was a good one. Debbie Melrose says, it's eat or heat these days. And then Lily Robin says, that's telling him, Debbie. Debbie Morrow says, back of the neck. Robert Vence Jr. says, at least he not 7 foot tall, as in the two Doctors. Debbie Morrow says, it's the one car. Brandon Moore says, sorry, I'm late. My sat-nav was taking me all sorts of places. At least you got home. And Debbie Morrow says, ding. Back to the story. I just knocked my microphone. Do I look tidy enough, Deb? Not sure. think I should do that. Maybe I should put Captain Kirk in my jacket just to show off I've got a really good Captain Kirk. Put this in there. There we go. Put James T. Kirk in my jacket. So, see, I was able to show off a little bit that I've got one. Right, where do we get up to? All right, so I've forgotten what I've got up to now. Oh, yeah, so the smart-ass smarty bloke is certainly joined the sides of the Sontarans because he wants to go off to Sontar and be a Sontaran human. Meanwhile, all the cars starting to fill with gas, for some reason, Gramps gets in the car and it starts filling even worse up with gas, and the gas starts flooding everywhere, and he's trapped in the car. The doctor can't get him out, and then all the music starts building up, and the Sontar Ha's are sort of chanted.
Ringing out.
Yeah, and then Gramps sort of flops and slumps in his car, and the doctor stands in the street looking a bit worried. End of the episode.
Master?
Yeah?
I didn't notice this before. I watched this the most recent time. In the credits, it says Sontarans created by Robert Holmes.
Well, you weren't watching the previous time. I think everybody noticed that. Even Ben noticed that particular statement.
I didn't watch it and I noticed that.
Anyway, in the subject of Deb watching the wrong episode, it's interesting to note that not only was this episode and the Poison Sky, which we're just about to talk about, there was also the Doctor's Daughter, the Unicorn, and the Wasp in between.
I was going to say, how did she get it so very wrong?
Maybe it was very eager to watch Silence in the Library.
Or very, very poorly.
Yeah, it's true. We'll say that. We'll go with very, very poorly.
We miss Debbie.
Yeah, so do I. Oh, dear. Oh, she says I look great, though. And then she says, come. What's she say that for? And then Lillian Robin says, cuddles with Jim Kirk Orr. I'm not cuddling him. He's just poking his head out of my jacket. And he might turn around and say, this is called kissing. You never know. And then Ian Kirk said, this story is about a Sontaran.
He's just sticking his head out of my jacket.
You too. Okay, right then.
You too as well. All four of them.
Anyway, Donna's mum saves the day by having a very simple object, an axe, to smash through the glass window of the car and therefore rescuing her dad.
I have my axe.
Meanwhile, the Sontaran gas is spreading around the world in certain areas, illustrated by red splodges on a world map. Certain areas that look quite safe, like the desert areas and certain sort of areas of the Amazon rainforest, which anybody in those areas would be safe at this stage.
Yeah,
Australia. No, was it? Oh, the Australian desert was. Yeah. So anyway, they have to sort of leg it. And of course, Donna's mum says, oh, no, don't go with that man. Everywhere you go with him, it's trouble. That's a theme that keeps on sort of recurring in this era of Doctor Who. And of course, Will says, no, go off for that wonderful man. I think he's got a bit of a man crush on the Doctor, you know.
He's a great bloke. Go with him.
Yeah.
Run, follow your dreams, Donna.
So, and then we have some really cheesy sort of round-the-world news bulletins of our generic round-the-world actors that play the only news thread people that are on Doctor Who. And,
at least in the RTD era. I wonder if he's going to bring back some of the same newsreaders in the new RTD era.
Yeah, you know, that'd be good. That'd be quite topical if they did. Anyway, the Doctor decides this is a good time to give Donna the key to the TARDIS, but the ploy is to get her hidden in the TARDIS to keep her safe. Meanwhile, the war is sort of starting, and fake Martha, catches up with the Doctor. Now, you know instantly after just a couple of words between Doctor and fake Martha that the Doctor knows that this is the real Martha. So it's interesting to see his interactions with fake Martha right up to the time when he reveals to her that he knew all along.
Although did not catch that the first time I watched it.
No. Neither did I, but I was more aware of it this time.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, there's a bit of a rebellion at the academy, and just moving forward a bit. Then the Sontarans hijack the TARDIS with Donna inside it, and Doctor sort of sits back on the table with his feet up, preaching to the Sontarans. Who,
Master, what else happens in that scene when he's communicating with the Sontarans?
What?
We have the half second of Rose going, Doctor!
Do we?
Yes.
If it was even a half second, yeah, it was so. Yeah.
Oh, was that very like that? There is...
I can't see that she's saying Doctor.
Is it on the screen?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on the screen he's looking at when
Well, Donna's in the TARDIS, and just before Donna looks at the screen, you see the image of Rose.
Do you want me to give you a timestamp?
No, I do not. I accept it's there. I must have seen it before, but I didn't see it on this occasion because I might have blinked at that precise point.
Don't blink. Don't blink.
No.
Whatever you do.
That's the whole point, isn't it? Anyway, so when the rebellion of the
it's at 8:47.
All right, thank you. When the rebellion of the clever chavs actually occurs. He points a gun at this really pretty girl who's the only one that actually has some lines, who I'm pretty sure I've seen in other things recently, actually, on telly. Anyway, so he goes a bit sort of mad and sort of waving his gun everywhere. And then we see some more news flashes of the gas spreading. And Donna finds a phone and calls her family with tears in her eyes because she thinks they're all going to die. And, there's lots of scenes of sort of things brewing. You know, there's a lot of countdown clock and everybody sort of getting ready for a big invasion. And suddenly all these Sontaran soldiers...
No!
What?
The countdown clock is for nuclear annihilation.
Yeah, no, but it's part of the... Shut up. Anyway, so then all these Sontaran soldiers start marching through... a corridor nook was very clever because there can't have been that many Sontaran soldiers. I suspect it was some clever special effect to create it or make it look like there were so many.
They had 10 extras as Sontarans. Yeah. Or no, 10 Sontarans total, 8 extras.
The Doctor, of course, says to the unit bloke, get them out of there. That particular suggestion is ignored. And of course, well, lots of people are killed, including our little friend, who was called Ross, wasn't it? And then a great big sort of battle kicks off. Dan Starkey's Sontaran is thinking it's a bit like sport, not like war, as he says. That could have been another quote. And
I had several quotes.
Yeah.
Then, because there's a bit of an issue... The Doctor calls Donna in the TARDIS. So the only way they can get out of this is if Donna sort of sneaks into this area and switches a sat-nav. Sorry, sat-nav. That is topical, but I meant the transmat thing. Switches it back on. So she has to be very brave and work her way through the ship to get to this particular switch. Meanwhile, everybody's issued with gas masks, and of course the Doctor couldn't resist her, "Are you my mummy?"
Yeah.
Just for the sake of...
Yeah. Master.
Yes.
Master. It was scripted that Donna was going to knock that Sontaran out with her shoe.
Yeah.
But Donna is wearing trainers, and they thought it looked strange. Yeah. So that's why she grabs the mallet instead.
Anyway, everybody's choked this.
Can I just say, at that point,
yes,
that I haven't saved myself 400 and whatever pounds on a new PC as the internet just went off.
Oh, brilliant. I didn't even notice. Anyway, so they're all wearing these face masks, apart from the leader of the unit thing. The gas starts to sort of get thicker, and apparently there's a point in which if it gets a certain percentage, you die. And then the Valiant turns up and blows some of it away a little bit for a short time. Then it starts blasting things with this laser array that is very similar to the one that came out of the Death Star on Star Wars. So battle commences. And so eventually the Doctor leads fake Martha to where real Martha is. And a sort of scene of reunion and stuff occurs. And then soon as she's awake, the fake Martha collapses and her heart starts beating really fast and she starts dying. And then there's a conversation between fake Martha and real Martha. Sorry, there's nothing I can do. And there's a bit of a sentimental scene about, oh, you love your family, don't you?
She's a doctor. Like a proper doctor, not one with a blue box.
Yeah.
She can't save her.
So Donna succeeds.
He's rubbish.
Donna succeeds in her mission and teleports back to where the Doctor is. The Doctor then plays with the transmat and comes up with a plan. The plan is to use one of the gadgets that Smart Ass Nipper has created to ignite the gas in the upper atmosphere. And he does that. Cut a long story short, and we see this sort of like flaming sky thing. There was a point in which it's still light, and the spire of the Chrysler building is sort of in the region of the flames. I thought, well, that could cause a bit of an issue, but at least
I used to have problems with that scene, and I don't have any problems with it anymore. Okay, should have burned everybody.
Well, obviously. Science fiction genres don't like the Chrysler building because in a film I watched recently, it didn't survive in that particular film. Well, at least the top of it did, but the rest of it didn't. But anyway, so it was a very pretty scene, very impressive scene and very unlikely scene, the science fiction fantasy TV sort of spectrum, when the flames go all around the world very quickly and everybody's sort of really happy and pleased and saved. And then the Doctor runs back into the mansion because he's got another plan for this sort of gadget to blow up the cyber fleet. But he's cyber fleet, the Sontar fleet. Shut up. But the Sontar fleet has got a plan, but he has to do it. He has to give them a chance. And it's a stupid thing because he knows the Sontarans, they're never going to give in. So he's basically decided to go out there and for some reason get himself killed.
You know what he could have done? He could have run down to the local supermarket, grabbed some lettuce, and taken it up there and gone, see, I have a rutan with me.
No, you're not going to ding for that one. So anyway, he goes up to the Sontaran ship and, of course, says, if you don't do this, I'm going to blow you up. The Sontarans aren't bothered. So what actually happens, the big hero of the whole thing, the annoying teenager Nipper, does a clever thing and swaps places with the Doctor, and he ignites the Sontaran fleet, saving the world.
How come the Doctor was holding that control? Why didn't the control go with him when he swaps places?
Because it's a
science fiction fantasy TV
program. He grabbed it, didn't he? He grabbed the thing as he did the swap over. Not worried about that. That's what happened. And then, of course, Martha comes into the TARDIS to say goodbye to everybody and see she's going to stay behind. But something happens and it whips her away because she's got a contract for a few extra episodes. So then we see quite a sort of almost a preview of something that we didn't get to a certain extent. But we'll talk about that next time. So there we are. That's the Sontaran Stratagem of Poison Sky. Right, certain aspects of this story were a little bit on the silly side, but on the whole, it was a very entertaining romp, especially having UNIT back and new Sontarans and sort of iconic actors, Christopher Lloyd.
Lloyd?
What's the matter with me? Christopher Ryan. So I quite enjoyed it. Again, it's one of those things I wish they could have made it one episode. But I wasn't overly annoyed that it was two. I thought that Martha was a bit cocky in it, unnecessarily so. The Doctor was a bit, in certain times, a little bit arrogant. Donna was fine. It was just a bit of Doctor Who fun, to be fair. I don't think it's the best. It's not the worst. I'd say it's between a middle and half-decent story. I'm going to give that one. What did you think about it, Ben?
Well, I, in the style of our absent friend Debbie Melrose, I sat down to watch this last night and watched the wrong episode.
Yeah. Oh my, which one did you watch?
I watched England versus Australia, the second one, the international women's Ashes match. Completely the wrong episode. And that was a massive waste of time as well. So I'm doing this from memory and Adam's really sketchy outline of the plot there.
It wasn't sketchy, it was how it was supposed to be.
Right. that's the non-director's
cut. Well, it can't be that sketchy, but the story itself is about 90 minutes long. It's taken 45 minutes to do that story, so we've actually sort of covered about half of it, to be fair. I think
I didn't interrupt as often as I usually do.
Thank you, Kirby. Get one of those.
But yeah, for my own,
no,
definitely not. It was yes, it was all right. I completely agree about certain aspects, as you mentioned there, like Martha being just way too, I'm so over you, you're yeah. so yesterday cock. It's just yeah. like, all right, give it a rest, love, we all know you still would. Wow, come on now, be honest.
I can't get my hands lotion out.
I thought the old DT was as fantastic as usual. Donna was still breaking the character in, still very good. The storyline itself, yeah, fair enough. As you said, a mildly entertaining romp that would fill an hour and a half of any poor morsel's time.
Thank you, Ben. Ian Kirk says, this story is about a Santaran too short. Sorry, I got win there. And then Ross, yeah. Robert Vance Jr. says, Ross, the new Captain Yates. Lillian Roberts said, Ross dies, unfortunately. I think Lillian obviously thought Ross was quite pretty. Robert Vance Jr. says,
I didn't see how Friends finished. Thanks for the spoilers.
Yeah, Robert Vance Jr. said, that's sad. Oh, well. Andy Nunny says, oh, no, he doesn't. Sorry. He said, too busy to do ironing, so nothing from me this week. We've just that's not oh, quite no. true, is it, Andy? Because you've just said that. Rob Finch Jr. says, but we know a turn left with that Torchwood. And then, oh, Andy, not ironing your words today. Careful what you're ironing, Andy, especially with your reputation of wearing robes while doing stuff of an evening. Lynn and Robin rumpled, Andy. And then Andy was sleeping instead of ironing. Ian Kirk said, Andy reviews episodes while ironing. That's why it goes so smoothly.
Oh.
Half a ding for that one, Ian. Okay, Kirby, what did you think?
Just as with every single Series 4 episode except for one, I just absolutely
for
love
one,
this
don't
story.
You mean 42? That's for me.
Or do you mean 4-1 as in season 4 episode 1?
Series 4. And the one that I like the least still
don't
has
tell us.
Some good.
Don't tell us.
Still has some good things in it.
Oh, is this one? You like this one the least?
No.
Oh.
No, this one is one of the nice middle of the road ones in a great series. I don't think it was too long. All the acting
said.
Was great. I liked smarmy, smart-ass teenager, because I was once a smart-ass teenager, as you can imagine.
Yes. I've seen the pictures, Kirby. I've seen the pictures.
Oh, yes. Oh dear!
You were geek before geek was cool.
That's right, and it wasn't cool then. I was actually literally stuffed in a locker.
Oh. But you got out though. Never mind.
So some of the jocks just decided to shove me in a locker in the locker room.
That does sound rather funny, but I shouldn't be laughing.
So, it's a great one. I like how Martha was brought back as a different Martha. And I'm looking forward to the one of the strangest stories next time, where which started one of the strangest, timiest, whimiest real life families ever.
Yes. Thank you, Kirby. So, Mary, I'm sure Ben wants to do a special jingle. What did you think?
Mary Blitzline.
I was not looking forward to this one. I remembered not liking it a whole lot the first time I saw it, and this time I didn't like it any. I don't think it was very well directed. It seemed it seemed choppy, but not exciting. You know what I mean? There were so many themes going on, and I was, because it was not moving at a really good pace, the things that didn't make sense like really stuck out. You know, one thing that annoyed me is the doctor being so irritated all the time with that Colonel Mack. It's like, you know, he didn't do anything to you personally, so, you know, don't be so rude. And the one big thing that always annoys me is the when the doctor ignites the gas to burn off. I mean, what is one of the big fuels of fire but oxygen?
And so hydrogen.
The whole atmosphere should be gone.
Yeah.
Not
it's
just
a science fiction fantasy TV program.
I know, but it's too messy.
There's got to be a certain amount of education in certain things, isn't there, to be fair?
I've just got to step out for 30 seconds.
Okay.
I did love Sylvia's resolution to getting Wilf out of that car.
Yeah.
I mean, the way the doctor was trying everything he could think of, and she comes up and smashes the window. It's like, yes, that's...
Yeah, well, you would have thought a sonic screwdriver could vibrate the glass to breaking, wouldn't you?
You'd think, yes, yeah, something would work. Yeah. But the doctor seemed only... His attention was so split. It's like he wasn't that concerned about Wilf. He was more concerned about the world. Mm. I think that it's the relationship between Donna and Wilf that lifted the whole thing. I mean, whenever I needed, you know, something to bring me back to liking the story, it would be a scene between those two, because they both are just sterling actors and did that so well. But overall, I'm about 50% there in liking this one.
Well, thank you, Mary.
Yeah.
Kirby.
What? Oh,
it's your that. Bit.
Robert Wince Jr. says, in a nutshell, the Centaurans lost their planet. Something is going on with missing planets here. And want to change our air to restart their cloning production. I have to say, the Centaurans look better than they did the two doctors. I guess they got bored fighting the Rutans. Also, the doctor's pose at the end of episode one looked kind of dumb. We get to see Martha working for UNIT and helping Torchwood during this time. Donna makes a great response about what happens to the doctor's companions. We see more of Donna's parents in this one. Well, parent and grandparent. Mm. We find out that UNIT has to change ammo because the Centaurans causing them to malfunction their guns. The rich kid at the end kills him and the Centaurans to save Earth. Okay, fine. But too bad about Ross.
Yeah.
I wish he would have carried on with the unit instead of being killed off. I missed the Brigadier. 3.5 stars out of 5.
That's quite low.
I love the way you're just not pernickety with our stuff, Kirby. That was brilliant.
Well, the Brigadier probably would have been just as annoying as Colonel Mack. He would have been, you know...
steady on.
Ooh, what was that?
That was me. I've got a frog in my throat.
Poor Froggy.
Yeah, it's too bad that Grogu didn't get that frog.
Well, I've got rid of Pascal now. I don't know how we managed to come in here anyway. I've got the door locked, so that doesn't happen anymore. Don't want those Frenchies coming in.
Mr. M says, Suntar.
I was joking. I love French people, especially the birds. No, I'm joking.
The Centauran Sky by Hal N. Rayner. This is a story that I loved on first broadcast, not so much as an adult. The Centaurans are great, but don't really tie into any of their earlier appearances. For a clone race, they seem to have quite a few different looks. The evil sat-nav idea is good, but wasted on this story. The genius teenager is as annoying as you would expect a genius teenager to be. Nice for you to UNIT in full force in this story, but a shame the Brigadier isn't there. Good to have Martha back, but it feels odd that most of the time it's a clone version of her that we see. Nice to see Freema covered in goo, though. Wolf is great in this episode and steals the show. Why didn't he join the TARDIS at this point? That's definitely a missed opportunity.
Yes.
So far, Series 4 has been pretty underwhelming, and the next episode will be the same.
What?
Well, I don't understand where he's getting that. Mm. Part 1 gets a 7 out of 10, Part 2 a 6 out of 10, so it averages out to a 6.5 out of 10. This is pretty much average Who. Next time, it all gets a bit incestuous.
Good
for
point.
Which I posted one of the standard memes showing the strange relationship between Davison and his daughter, etc.
Yes, okay. Anyway.
I might have to rewatch all this episode.
There seems to be a script that I'm not, a script I'm not supposed to read.
No, you're not supposed to read it. And what we've got coming up, Robert Vence Jr., Mary, they had too much comedy to this story. Debbie Melrose, 3 out of 5 for me.
But she didn't even watch it.
Watched it.
And this is, you'll like this one, Ben. Robert Vence Jr. says, and there's no emoji to state whether it's sarcastic or not, but he says, comedy gold, Ben.
Comedy, yeah, no, I take that with massive amounts of sarcasm.
Right.
I mean, he's listened. It can only be sarcasm.
Right, that's what we've got coming through. Oh, good. Right, then we got this. Hang on, if I can get this in a slick way. I'll try my best.
Ooh,
press the wrong thing there.
Yeah. Get down, slick.
Hello, 20 Megabytes Podcast, this is Ian Kirk.
Well, hello, Ian.
The Sontaran Stratagem and the Poison Sky by Helen Rayner. This is your final destination.
Is it?
Elon Musk looks very young in this. We have Wilf, Martha, and about 2 seconds of Rose on the screen.
Less than that.
You say potato, I say Sontaran. Let's call the whole thing off. Martha Jones now has an evil twin, rather TV cliche. Elon Musk redeems himself at the end, blowing up himself and the Sontaran fleet. An enjoyable romp. I have started watching The Silent Sea after Mary's recommendation last week. There are two doctors and a lot of corridors and a woman called Dr. Song, but no time travel. The pace is slow, a bit slower than a classic Doctor Who story. I am at episode 4, and they are still walking down corridors. Sontar-ha! Bye for now.
Oh, well, goodbye, Ian. Thank you very much for that contribution to the show. Mary, you have some text written by the Mileses.
Yes, our favourite couple.
Indeed.
Okay. And they wrote, Master Radigan, the inventor of the Atmos, is a right little Napoleon, definitely little man syndrome.
Yeah.
It's a long time since anyone said no to him. Unusual for the Sontarans to use an agent to do their work. It's easy to tell the difference between the different clone batches of the potato heads. When they are marching together, the heights are all different. There are only so many actors of the same height as Dan Starkey and Chris Ryan, although they are a few inches different. There are two Marthas. That's heaven, one with a belly button and one with a neck button. I wonder if her tattoo was also cloned. Hang on, I've seen that before somewhere else. Clones with umbilical cords on the back of their neck. I can't remember if it was a film or a TV show. Kirby will know.
Yep.
There's Donna's granddad, Wilf. Go, Bernard. Let's all put on gas masks and say, are you my mummy? There was a tumbleweed in the background, I'm sure. Well, that's new, the Sontarans being protected by an energy field that expands the metal in the rounds. Only problem is that the firing pin would have hit the percussion cap and the rifles would have exploded. Still, it is a science fiction fantasy show.
Yep.
Surely one spaceship isn't a battle fleet. The war must be going bad for them. They set fire to the sky, but there's an aircraft carrier up there. Stay safe and well, everybody. Linda and Terry Miles.
Thank you very much, Linda and Terry Miles and Mary, for dictating it. Sorry, I've just got slightly distracted by the football. Ben, you have some very important text to read, which has only just arrived, right hot off the digital press.
Oh, no chance to practice then.
No. I think he did that deliberately, though, Ben.
That's very nice of him. Hold on, I'm just putting you on the second pair of specs. There we go. Oh, wow, that makes it so much better. It's like putting on something that makes the world HD. Right, Adam.
Yes?
Second paragraph. Kirby, you're not needed today.
Aw.
I'm sorry. I could try and write one in if you like.
No.
No.
Okay, here we go. The two Marthas or no score draw, which is a footballing term. Dear 20 megabytes, the Sontaran stratagem, the poison sky, is, of course, a closely studied warning against over-dependency on sat-navs and about the health disbenefits of smoking in the car. Adam, it should be noted that whilst...
I have to time that for when you say noted, and it's very slightly delayed there, but thank you.
It's been worse. that everyone around the world being instructed to stay at home to avoid a pan-global danger in the atmosphere everywhere was a bit far-fetched. In fact, we should welcome these time travellers who think that to the 2020s. We also learn that at this time, a mallet was still an ideal tool to take down a Sontaran via its probic vent. This was long before Chibnall's wok agenda. Also, the policeman Tom Campbell from the alternate universe events in Dalek Invasion of Earth 2150 AD somehow turned out to be Doctor Who TV Prime Universe Donna Noble's grandfather.
There you go. Multiverse.
All in all. I'll continue. All in all, the Sontaran stratagem, the poison sky, is perhaps a bit overburdened with additional aspects of narrative to serve well as a good reintroduction of the Sontarans. They have always been a very distinctive and well-defined race from which the nature of their narratives may be interestingly coloured. Here, the pressure of other elements, Martha, Unit, Asmos, Ratigan, Wilfred and copy clones, do tend to crush the Sontarans into being a relatively generic alien aggressor. All that said, the two principal Sontarans do a very good job in their own portrayals. Colonel Mace is a passable and different unit commanding officer and happens to be played by my junior school headmaster's son.
Wow.
Oh.
That deserves a wow. I'll do that again, right?
Oh, God.
But this time, pretend you're watching the best firework display ever. So we need a big...
Perfect dog bark.
Ooh, right.
Yeah,
Colonel Mace is a passable and different unit commanding officer and happens to be played by my junior school headmaster's son.
Ooh.
Ooh. That ruined it there, Adam. Thank you, Mary.
Sorry.
thank you, Mary, for joining in, and Kirby. And thank you, Adam, for ruining it. Alan, it was Adam. Adam ruined it, not me.
I embellished it, actually, to be fair, but carry on.
You something'd it. Most of the rest of the cast also do well, with the possible exception of Ratigan, the portrayal of which was probably a thankless task. The story is perhaps 10 minutes too short, as who wouldn't have liked to see Commander Score's sibling cohort member Strax pop up for a little more light relief. Next up, Doctor Who and the wife and daughter job share, or the story of Arthur and Martha. Those are my thoughts. The counsellor, the very Reverend Alan T.
Reverend. Well, there you go. I must admit, Anyway, I must admit, I did think while we were discussing this character, is it Ratigan, that he's almost like an evil incarnation of Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, yeah.
Right then. Stuff coming through on the live feed. Yes, we do a thing on Facebook. It's only me and some voices. Where did we go? Oh, Robert Bench Jr. Oh, we did the Comedy Gold Ben. And then it's Debbie Melrose. Ooh. Oh, that was.
Was she joining in?
Yeah. And Lillian Robbins said, "Ooh, I was joining in too." But
they joined in properly, Adam.
I actually joined in properly, to be fair, but no one listened. So
Why did you play the Hallelujah chorus? I said fireworks.
I was embellishing my ooh with the Hallelujah.
Should we do it again and then you can edit it in later? We've now got woos from Lillian and Debbie as well. So if we add them into the mix, it will sound pretty convincing.
Well, you know, if he wanted to use music, he can use the Royal Fireworks music.
Well, what it should be is what's it called? The Charge of the Light Brigade, is it?
No, shut up. I haven't got that anyway.
That's the fireworks.
I could do the big celebration music.
That's the 1812 Overture.
No.
You're quite right. Thank you, Kirby.
I could do our special big celebration music, but no one's listening to me.
And disabuse yourself of the idea that Adam does any post-show editing.
No, I don't.
Well, actually.
He used to.
This might be a good point to add my new feature to the podcast, because obviously everybody who listens and everyone who takes part in the podcast knows that I by far am the least geekiest person on here. And so my new segment is called Increase My Geek.
I thought we were going to do a big woo for Alan T. Butcher. Or was it someone else?
No, that was coming in for me there. And so what I've done... That's all right. I've tried to make myself a bit more geeky and get a bit more into the spirit of geek and find out some really interesting things about
Doctor
Who, right?
Oh!
So you can save them. You can do them after each fact, okay? So my two facts that I've researched... you're getting a bit overboard now.
I'm just trying to pick out the best one, really.
I've done the research. I'm trying to increase my geek. So my first two increase, and there'll be two of these every week. My first increase my geek fact. Get ready for the sound effect, Adam.
Oh God, which one?
The first one, the one that goes ooh.
Oh.
That one. Yeah. Okay. Right. So my first fact is. Doctor Who.
Oh, sorry, I thought you paused.
Jumping.
Yeah, you've got a little
you
bit
paused.
Of
I thought the pause was for that. God's sake.
So wait until I've clearly finished, okay?
Oh, God, right.
Yeah, fact on. Number one. Doctor Who started in 1963.
Go. Oh!
Yeah. And fact number two, in Increase My Geek, our new regular series, number two is lots of people have played the Doctor.
Ooh!
My goodness.
Thank you very much, sir, and we'll have more Increase My Geek.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know any of those things.
Kirby, that's what I'm here for, my friend. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, better keep it going.
Brilliant. Fact,
were you rattling something in a tin can?
Anyway, Debbie Melrose says, increase my geek? Yes, indeed. Right, where do we get up to? We were going to do some news, weren't we? Thanks to everybody for contributing feedback to the show, that 20mb.feedback@gmail.com, or by the post that Kirby does on Facebook. Doctor Who News. Let's go back to where we last had some Doctor Who news. God, there's not much, is there? Lordy. One thing, which is the release of Doctor Who magazine issue 574 with a picture of old Sixie on the cover. A friend of the show. And been in my car three times.
Been in my car, too.
Three times in my car. And I bought him a few coffees. That went quiet then. Right then. So there's... basically talk of what's in it. A preview of Mind of the Hoodiac, Russell T. Davies' first Doctor Who script ahead of its big Finnish release. That will excite Mary. Tribute to Doctor Who director Michael Ferguson, who passed away in October. A visual effects designer Ben Pickles describes his contributions to the 13th Doctor era. And loads of other stuff. You can get that actually from whoone.co.uk. If you live outside the UK, you can get that to your door easier than trying to get your local news agency to stock it, especially at this day. And I was just thinking, actually, about 10 years ago, there was Doctor Who Adventure magazine as well. That died a death, didn't it? So, and Doctor Who, as in, whowon.co.uk, Leeds products have not changed since last week. So we've still got London 1965, the 12th Doctor Chronicles 2. These are all Big Finish and BBC audios, stroke audio novels. And still coming up is the 8th Doctor, Charlie Pollard, Further Adventures, K-Doc Point, a Torchwood story not featuring Captain Jack. Rather pointless. Fifth Doctor 41, featuring, well, on the cover we've got Adric, Nyssa, Tegan, and the Fifth Doctor. That sounds rather cool, doesn't it, Mary?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the Flux DVD is also available very soon.
You mean,
on pre-order.
You mean Flux?
No, I meant Flux, Kirby. Lavazzi, they sent me an email. This is the ever reliable and somewhat, you know, what is it when you sort of you always look after people? It's almost like have their little arms around us. They're very, very nice at Lavazzi. I got an email from them, and I'm just trying to fill while I try and find the email. Because they were...
You should have been prepared.
Oh, yeah. Lavazzi Doctor Who, Gap Years. It says, Gap Years. Doctor Who Season 22 is coming on Blu-ray. A new Doctor Who Gap Year is on its way. Now, this is what he says. This is, sorry, Lavazzi, but essentially it's Meninda. Following Jodie Whittaker's regeneration, we'll have a 13-month wait to meet the 14th Doctor, the longest Doctor Who Gap Year of recent times. Not sure it is, actually. I'm pretty sure we had 13 months earlier on. There you go. Someone's laughing. I think it might be Ben.
Yes, because I've just worked out fact number 3, which I'll do after your Doctor Who news.
Oh, dear. This isn't news, by the way. This is our sponsors. Oh, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
They have a great... This
I'll
is what I'm
my
trying
to... usual amount of listening.
What I'm trying to encourage people to do with Lavazzi, apart from buy scarves and stuff, which is what they sell, is scarves to join their mailing list and their blog and stuff, because it's really...
What would be the benefits of that?
Getting information off them from a company that is massively enthusiastic about Doctor Who.
So you'd be able to find out about all the new things that were coming out before they came out, pre-releases and how to order stuff, things like that?
Yeah. That
so how do you sign up? How do you sign up for it, then?
If you visit lavazzi.co.uk, and there's a top bar of menu items, index items, and in amongst that is Doctor Who, and then Doctor Who merchandise. If you click on Doctor Who, and then you must remember to click on Doctor Who merchandise, because that's where you can buy stuff. There's also a Doctor Who shop. But if you go on Doctor Who, there's their blog, and that is where you can contribute and read fan fiction.
And that's where you can sign up as well, is it?
Yes, it says subscribe to Lavazzi newsletter. You put your name and your last name, email address, click submit, and then you get all that stuff coming through.
And that's why it's worth signing up. So go to lavazzi.co.uk, put in your email address, and get all the new Doctor Who news about the stuff they sell before we get a chance to read it out.
Thank you, Ben.
Whatever they pay you, I want half of it.
Hacked off, you get a round of applause, and I don't for that, because I was actually putting a lot of effort into that bit of that particular feature. Right, that now brings us to...
And I came along and saved it.
I mean, you're looking back at the video feed and see if anybody's said anything. Right, then.
Master, yeah. I added one picture to the feedback post, just because I felt like it. It's a picture I took at a Concus Cerberus many years ago. Of a Centauran action figure. It's a potato with a face drawn on it.
I'm trying to find this. I don't know why. It's very good.
It's Concus Cerberus exclusive Centauran action figures. Fun, highly detailed, full of vitamin C. $24.99.
Well, of course, people who listen to the show can only see these things if they join the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group,
which you can join.
how do you do that? Oh, no.
Good grief. Alan T. Butcher says, Looking forward to the Doctor Unbound series of Colin Baker as a different version of the Doctor, Mary. That sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And then...
a different version of the Doctor?
And then answering...
Seriously?
I don't know. I suppose the same way David Tennant is supposed to be playing a different version of the Doctor.
What? Like number 16 or number 24?
I don't know. But in reply to Debbie Melrose's Increase My Geek, Alan T. Butcher says, can't be applied to you, Debbie. That's very true.
That is very true. I've got fact number 3 here, actually, of Increase My Geek.
Oh,
I've just found this on the internet, so it's got to be true.
Wikipedia.
Have you got the sound effect ready again?
Oh, God. Yeah, go on.
Okay. The Doctor travels in a TARDIS. TARDIS stands for Trying Amid Rubbish, Dismal, Iffy Scripts.
Oh! That's a good one.
It's on the internet, Mary.
It is when Chris Chibnall's in charge, yes. Okay, now we move on to...
Master.
Nearly move on to me, to Kirby interrupting me again.
Master, I don't know if you saw it. I posted on the Facebook group this past Monday as a tribute to the fact that the last Monday in January is National Bubble Wrap Appreciation Day.
Yeah, I saw that and I didn't bother reading it, yeah.
So I
saw it and appreciated it.
A creep.
Yeah, I
saw it and I kept on scrolling.
So did I, Mary, but I was just being nice.
That's what happens to my TikTok account. Right, then, moving on. Right, this is the
wonderful green bubble wrap from the Ark in Space.
Yes.
I did see it, really.
Where did I get up to? Oh, yes, right then. So now we talk about the last bit of the show. We talk about what we've watched this week. I can start because it's my show, apparently, so I've been told. So, not a lot of films this week, to be fair, because I've been mainly playing golf on my PlayStation, because I like playing golf, and I play it on my PlayStation, and I've enjoyed it. Anyway, what did we watch? Right, yeah, so Isabella and I were allowed to go to the cinema on Friday night, so we did, and we decided to watch Moonfall. It's a movie.
You were allowed?
Curious about that one.
Yes, we were allowed to go watch it. And I shall not spoil said movie in case anybody else wants to go and watch it, but our opinions, and bear in mind that when I leave this show, and I will be leaving it...
in about 6 years' time.
No, because basically I will be doing... or plan to do a podcast with Isabella about movies. It's partly because me and Isabella like spending time together.
So you're pitching us for your daughter again. Do you realise that in 6 years' time, we'll all be back on the same podcast? Mm. It will just be about movies, not Doctor Who.
There's a difference. Yeah. She's not
which
Alicia.
Which I would like to do. That would be fun.
No, it's just me and Isabella. Because Isabella wants to do an A-level in movie studies or film studies. And it's all part and parcel of her interest in films and such.
Didn't you once start a podcast with one of your other daughters?
Yeah, I was about to say. And she didn't last very long.
Because she wasn't really interested in Doctor Who.
She was extremely interested in Doctor Who. Isabella
is thoroughly interested in movies. Now, be quiet. I'm going to say what I thought about this cover... stuff about this Moonfall. Now, Moonfall is a science fiction fantastical movie. It's not fantastic, I would say. It's basically, if you go and watch it, you've got to suspense your disbelief so far that you'd be careful not to fall out of the cinema in the process. Although the story is quite good and there's great special effects, there's good action in it, the physics and the impossibilities connected to the story are so glaring that it actually hurts. It's too long. It's about 2 hours and 10 minutes. It doesn't need to be that long. I think they can cut quite a lot out. It's incredibly cheesy. It's almost like...
I was looking forward to seeing this.
It's almost like a Mickey take, I'm trying to think of the polite word, a Mickey take of some things like Independence Day and Day After Tomorrow, and there's another one I can't remember the title of. But having said all that, we did actually quite enjoy it. But it's just a little bit too long for if you want to go and watch a film for a sort of a meaningless romp, This one's a little bit too long for that. But you'll be watching it and you'll think, well, that reminds me of this film. Oh, that reminds me of that film. That's a specific scene that specifically, you know, if you've ever seen a film called Star Trek, the motion picture, there's a scene where the Enterprise sort of finally arrives at the V'ger place. And it stops and they get out in the Enterprise and they walk in through. As it's flying through these sort of weird sort of graphics and stuff, there's a scene in the film that's similar to that. But it is watchable.
All I remember from the Star Wars the movie, or Star Trek the movie, is it must have been an hour long slow pan around the, the ship.
Yeah, there was that.
You know what the nickname of that movie was for a very long time?
What?
It was Star Trek the Motionless Picture.
Nah, it's a good film. It's a bit too long, a bit self-absorbed, but I did and do have a great affection for it. Right, so back to Moonfall. Just be prepared, that's all. It's just a bit of entertainment at the end of the day. It is watchable, but it's very predictable and it's a bit cheesy. It's very cheesy. But if you don't mind slightly predictable, cheesy films, and you just like the special effects and getting from the start to finish and seeing where that goes, it's okay. It's just there's one particular bit, and I don't want to spoil anything, where they show a graphic of what would happen if the moon started plummeting towards Earth in a circular motion, a spiral motion. It would apparently, the gravity will make the moon break up before it actually got to hit Earth, but they forgot that when they actually got to the stage where the moon was about to hit Earth. It's so many silly things in it, but watch it. So it's just a bit of fun in it.
I have a feeling I wouldn't be able to watch it because of the unscientificness of it.
You should watch it just to see how much of there's lots of science in it, but it's incorrect science. I'd say watch it, Kirby, but just be prepared to get annoyed by certain aspects of it.
I'm so prepared to be annoyed, I'm not going to watch it.
I'll tell you what, Adam, you really sold that film.
I'm not here to sell it.
It sounds like it's utter horse manure.
No, I wasn't here to sell it. I was just here to criticise it, and that's what I did.
You did.
The other film we watched on Saturday was the other Ghostbusters film, the one with all the girls in it. Now, we all heard that the film got slated by Ghostbusters fans for one reason or other, and we all thought it was good fun. So I think Afterlife is a better film, but I don't think there's really... I mean, when you go into a Ghostbusters film, by way of contrast to Moonfall, you know the science is going to be all over the place. This is just a bit of fun. So if you go watching Moonfall with that same attitude, it's not a problem. So come on, Kirby. Did you watch Ghostbusters at all?
That one, yeah, I haven't seen
it. Well, there you go.
Well,
go to Moonfall with the attitude of you're going to see a film like Ghostbusters, and then you'll be fine. But yeah, no, it's not bad at all. It's almost like a Doctor Who paying a bit too much homage to itself, whereas Afterlife is a continuation of the Ghostbusters story. But this is like a reimagined. But they're all in it, so they almost align. In fact, Dan Aykroyd was one of the producers, so they all love Ghostbusters. And it was good. I thought, hang on, when's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man going to come into it? It seems to be what's the word for it? Trademark of Ghostbusters movies. But there you go. So that's what we watched this week. Both quite good and quite enjoyable, but in a weird way. Ben, what did you watch and enjoy this week?
Well, today, recording date is the 6th of February 2022, a very sad day in the history of British television, for it was announced earlier today that Channel 5 is dropping the Australian TV soap Neighbours.
Is it?
Which leaves
Where's
all Neighbours homeless. Thank you. It's basically, from what I understand, the viewing figures have been rubbish in Australia for years, and it was only the funding of Channel 5 for the last 10 years since they've had it that's kept it going. So now they're going to stop showing it. Chances are it's going to finish as a soap opera as a whole, is very sad. Because most Brits have very good memories of watching Neighbours back in the 80s.
And
with Kylie
lots of Hollywood stars have come out of it.
And yeah, absolutely. exactly. So very sad day in television for England, if that indeed is the case, because, well, no one else is going to pick it up. But what have I been watching? Well, with the wife, we've been watching the Griff Rhys Jones Travelling Round Australia program. We'd watched the New Zealand one. We've now moved on to the Australia one. That's really good. That's on Netflix UK and goodness knows where else. With the wife and eldest kid, we've been watching Anton Deck's Limitless Ladder. We record it on a Saturday night and then watch 20 minutes a night as we eat tea on Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday. Now, obviously, that's something that only Brits will know about. But if you have watched that, then do notice this next time you watch it. You won't fail to notice it now. When Deck talks to the ladder to get them to reveal an answer or if they've won the money or whatever, he shouts at it like it's a deaf Alexa.
I shout at my Alexa all the time.
But yeah, but if it was deaf and you were angry with it, he shouts at it like that. It's so funny, but that's a reasonably bad program. In the studio, I've been watching lots of cricket, lots of snooker, and the best thing I've watched this week, if not this year, and I know we're only 6 weeks into it, was series two of the Ricky Gervais comedy Afterlife.
I laughed, I cried a little bit more,
and then I watched series three, episode one, and I completely lost interest.
It's gilded with quotes, isn't it? What? Hang on, we watched series two, then series one?
No, it's series three, episode one.
Oh, okay.
Series two was wonderful, and then it got. Then I watched the first episode of series three.
Bournemouth of Lost, by the way. Bournemouth won, Ben.
Yes, I've got it on. I'm going to turn over to the snooker now. But yeah, I just lost interest in it in series three. It was too focused on the other characters. It may well turn back in the other episodes. I shall continue to watch it.
Yeah, continue to do so, because it's still brilliant.
But it was. Well, I don't know. I didn't find it so brilliant with the long-haired bloke from the paper. And the young bloke from the paper who was the stepson, him. I don't like that. I lost interest in that.
It's really good. So,
I want more Ricky Gervais. But yeah, that's basically all I've been watching. So yeah, watch all of it because it's wonderful.
Yes, indeed it is. Thank you very much, Ben. Kirby, what have you been watching?
Let's see. We actually decided to pay the $5 to get the Peacock streaming service so we could watch the Olympics.
Is that not sport?
Yes, it's the curling that we're watching.
Isn't it? I love curling.
But that does surprise me. That's a sport still, Kirby. It is sport.
Yeah, curling is different.
I don't know what it is about it. You know, I love cricket and football and tennis and basketball and Formula One and all these sports and curling.
It is great. I haven't watched any of it so far.
Since we have Peacock now, the premium with ads version of Peacock, I discovered that that's where I can watch the TV series Resident Alien. So I plan to start binge watching that.
Did you say that you got Peacock?
Peacock.
Yeah, okay.
Peacock is really, if you don't have cable, it's really the only way of watching the Olympics.
If you're not American, Peacock is a really, really bad old lady's clothes shop.
Yeah, it's Peacocks.
In the past week, with Fred, we watched a Goofy movie and Tron. Goofy movie she's seen many times, but she'd never seen Tron before. She's almost too bored by it, but she liked it. And then yesterday, I don't know why, I just happened to... Something reminded me of the movie, so I pulled out my DVD of Beetlejuice. I hadn't seen that in years.
Beetlejuice.
Yes, and just absolutely love it. So
I love Winona Ryder in that.
Yes.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm having thoughts about now.
So that's the main thing. And Doctor Who for some reason. Yeah,
thank you very much, Kirby. What's going on here? Anity Butch says, as if Time War happened earlier. Debbie Melrose, thank you, Alan. Then she says, I watched Green Planet on iPlayer and Kanto for the millionth wonderful time. Doctor Who, obviously, wrong episodes. and Young Frankenstein. And then Alan T. Butcher.
Frankenstein.
Ben is right. R.I.P. Neighbours. Hope remains, though it could be saved, unless the BBC are not allowed, but the BBC put some money into it, where it was originally on. And, of course,
why
maybe Delrose...
put money into it? That's absurd.
I know. Maybe Delrose says, adore Tron.
Oh, I remember why I decided to watch Tron. I'm watching the series on Disney Plus, where this guy goes out in search of existing props from various
like
Disney
films. For Back to the Future, the Discovery Channel, just saying, Discovery Plus.
And he found some of the props from Tron and took them around to various people, and it was fascinating.
Right.
He's also the ones I've seen have also done props from the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie and Mary Poppins.
I think we should do a Back to the Future podcast where we watch like one film a week and review it and then start again.
It wouldn't be very long, would it? On the subject of the Olympics, the Winter Olympics, people in the UK can watch it on BBC and Eurosport Plus, Discovery Plus as well, if you just happen to have that where you can select what you want to watch.
You can watch it because you pay your license fee.
Yeah, but everybody has to pay a license fee. What are you on about?
I don't have any sort of cable or satellite subscription.
But if it weren't on the BBC, then be watching it on a subscription channel, i.e. Eurosport, and another subscription channel, Discovery Plus. Enough of the Olympics, so we come up to the highlight of the show. It's Mary's bit. I don't know what we're going to call it, but we're going to call it Mary's bit. Oh, that was what was sort of Kirby's bit, wasn't it? Mary, we are poised to listen to your dulcet tones to take us into the end of the show while I try to avoid the possibility of eating one of the jammy dodgers in that tin.
I want a jammy dodger.
You want a jammy dodger? Tough.
Yes, I want one.
I could
actually drive 5 minutes and get those.
Stop interrupting. Mary's about to engage in this particular bit of the show. That's horrible to do naughty things like that. Sorry, Mary, about my co-presenters interrupting your bit.
It's Mary's bit. It's Mary's bit. What has she been watching? I bet it's not rubbish.
Well, I did try to watch on HBO Max. I tried watching... The Gilded Age, and that was a complete waste of time. It has so many good actors in it, and it's done by Julian Fellowes, you know, who did Downton Abbey and other, you know, very classic costume dramas and that. So I had high hopes, but no, it was a complete waste. So I don't recommend it to anybody. And on Peacock, if you have it, Kirby, there is a really good drama called Vigil. It's a multi-part series, and it stars the Susan. Can't think of her last name, but she played the TARDIS for the 11th Doctor.
Oh,
in The Doctor's Wife. Yeah.
No, no, you mean?
I'm sorry. What?
Saran Jones. Saran Jones. Yes.
Okay. And she's really, really good in it.
Oh, Dr. Sounds
Foster.
Interesting.
Oh, that wasn't.
Because our topic this week was about Suntarans, I went into Big Finish and looked up a lot of Suntaran stories, most of which I've listened to. These go through all the doctors. One that come out fairly recently, within the last 2 or 3 years, is called The Suntarans, and is part of...
Catchy name.
Big Finish's creative name. It's part of their early adventures series starring the first Doctor with Stephen and Sarah Kingdom, which you might remember Sarah Kingdom from the...
Gene Marsh.
Gene Marsh from the Daleks Master Plan
that
we only saw, you know, we saw a reconstruction of, so we didn't get to see a lot of her. Mm. But in this, Peter Purvis... is Stephen, and Gene Marsh does do Sarah Kingdom, but Peter Purvis also voices the first Doctor, and he does a really good job of it. But it's a really good story. But my only problem with it was using Jean Marsh. You know, we remember Sarah Kingdom as being this young, aggressive, space security service person. And even the picture on the CD cover has, you know, the original, you know, she looks young and really great. But when she voices her character, she sounds as she probably is, old and fragile. Yeah.
So old.
So that didn't work so well.
Louise Jameson does a good job in making herself sound young. Apparently so does who played Joe Grant? Oh, I don't know, I can't remember her name.
Katie Manning,
yeah. They both do a good job of getting their voices up a bit.
So I think that was like the only thing that kind of pulled me out of the story while listening. But it is a good story, and well worth whatever you get, whatever you pay for it. And another one that I found that I really enjoyed, really, really enjoyed, and it's part of the Big Finish's Lost Stories. The Lost Stories range are stories that were written for TV but were never made. So they played around with the script to make it more of an audio story. And this one is called The First Sontarans, and it is the Sixth Doctor and Perry. And the nice thing about this story is that it's an origins story, where the Sontarans started and how the war between them and the Rutans began and all that. I really highly recommend that. There's also the story called The Terror of the Sontarans, and that's the Seventh Doctor and Mel. Dan Starkey helped to write that one. He co-wrote it with someone, and he plays the Sontarans in most of these stories. Mm-hmm. And then there's the fourth Doctor Adventures, there's the King of Sontar, and that's the Fourth Doctor with Leela, and that's the third season in those in the runs of his stories. And then there's one called The Heroes of Sontar, and that is with the Fifth Doctor and everybody that was in his TARDIS. So that's a real fun one. I really liked that one. And going outside of actual Doctor Who, some of the spinoffs, there, of course, are the releases of the Paternoster Gang, which includes Dan Starkey's Sontaran. And a really funny one is in the Torchwood range, and it's called The Great Sontaran War. And it's Dan Starkey, again, being the Sontaran, and Ianto Jones. And they both live in a camper van, you know, like holiday park. And it's a very funny one. So if you want to laugh, then I recommend that one from the Torchwood range. So in case I hit on somebody's favorite doctor or favorite companion, these are all really good stories that if you like Big Finish, you know, you might want to dive into. In terms of things I've read, I'm still reading Blood Heat. It's a rather thick book, so I'm working my way through it. I remember last week I said it's this one where we go sideways in time and there's all these out of time characters from the Doctor's past that are a part of that story. And this week I just started a Target novel, The Mythmakers, which of course is a Target book that is the, you know, goes to that First Doctor story with Stephen and Vicky, which again we saw like a reconstruction of because it doesn't really exist, but it is a delightfully written Target book. I love it when the authors of these Target books decide to, you know, make the story bigger and better than what we saw on TV. And it's hard for us to judge the TV one because we saw, like I said, mostly a reconstruction. But I'm loving the Target book, The Mythmakers. So that's what I've been reading, listening to.
Why, thank you, Mary. Isn't that lovely, everybody?
Yes.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And I'm reading over that about that show that you suggested. It looks interesting.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep Peacock for a little bit. I'm annoyed by 3 or 4 minutes of ads.
Mm. Oh yeah, yeah. But they play that usually at the beginning, and then it's rare that they stick commercials in between.
Right.
Yeah. So, I've only had it since the Olympics began, so I haven't really had a chance to do a lot of looking around.
Debbie Malrose says, love Jammy Dodgers. Sorry to interrupt. Kirby Bartlett Sloan, and I can't believe he's actually asking this. If I may be pedantic, Jammy, J-A-M-M-I-E, Dodgers.
Oh, conditional clause.
Alan T. Butcher, I watched Upstairs Downstairs where Sarah Kingdom and Arak from Metabilis 3 work for a chunky Gilmore from The Revelation of the Daleks.
Yeah, very true, very true.
And then Mythmakers is my favorite Target book.
Oh.
Yeah, I've discovered that I can see the comments for the live feed without actually having to watch the live feed. So watch out, I may comment more on the live feed.
Yes. Next time we're going to be discussing The Doctor's Daughter, and hopefully it will be this time next week. I've got something coming up soon, so I'm just going to check my calendar. I know that that's all right, that's not until the 27th. I've got a show to film on the 27th of February, so we can't record then. In fact, I'm going to be busy that weekend because I've got a show to record on the 26th of February as well. So so no show 27th of February, but yes, show next time, week, COVID permitting. I suppose if I've got COVID, I could still record. It's not my fault if I'm off with COVID, is it? Right then, so I am now going to end the show with the usual way, but prior to nipping down the road to give Jeremy Dodgers to Debbie Melrose for her appreciation of this rather fine product, which we're not going to get any money for me advertising. So until next time, thank you for listening, watching, taking part in the show. Please continue to do so by the usual means. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye.
I'm not cuddling him, he's just sticking his head out of my jacket.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.